All right, hello, assalamu alaikum, everybody. This is episode 6 on self-sovereignty and custody. The key point being that you can't resist riba if you don't hold your own keys. So today it's a guest episode. We have Abu Yusuf joining us. He is, mashallah, been putting out a lot of content and is knowledgeable in this space, both technically and spiritually. And we draw on him for advice on how we can actually, well, one, wrap our heads around this because some of us are still in ETFs. And then two, actually learn how to, or take the first steps in actually taking self-custody and reestablishing the khilafa through our money. Please, if you could introduce yourself and then we'll go around and yeah, just jump into this.
JazakAllah khair, thanks for the introduction. And for those who are unaware, my name being Abu Yusuf, that is a kunya. And kunya, normally Muslims or Muslim men have their normal name and they're born with. And kunya is just like means father of Yusuf, because I have a son called Yusuf. So yeah, just a student of knowledge, I guess you could say, someone who studied a bit of Islam and also a tech geek. So I've always been to computers from even before I was Muslim. So when Islam and then we have riba and then Bitcoin came along, it was just a match for me, coalesced in my mind. And I've been here ever since, going ever more deeper into Bitcoin, to my own detriment sometimes. and I'm glad to be here contributing, inshallah. Jazakallah khair.
Jazakallah khair. MB, I think you wanted to jump in and lead the discussion. I've heard you on the stage talking about self-custody very passionately, so you're the best person to start.
Yeah. So I think when people get started in Bitcoin, you know, obviously they will open up an exchange and they will buy their first amounts of Bitcoin. But I think along that process, you know, a lot of people kind of forget that they actually need to take their Bitcoin outside of the exchange. Can you explain to us what benefits are there for self-custodying Bitcoin? Let's just start with that basic question.
I think it was me, yeah?
Yeah.
So with the topic of avoiding riba or using Bitcoin as a tool for that, I think from my experience, personally, avoiding riba is more a mental and spiritual goal that one wants to achieve, and Bitcoin is a tool to do that. And I think when we must say that or frame it in that way, it's something that one wants to do and is adamant and determined to do so. It's not something that someone does on the side or it's a byproduct or it's just something that happens on the side. It should be a primary motivation. And the reason I say that is because without that motivation, as it stands at the moment, there are a few hurdles and friction points in doing so. And therefore, you have to be motivated. It's like me when I first became Muslim and I was in college. And wearing a thobe or dressing in Muslim clothes or Muslim cultures wasn't the norm. So adopting that behavior was abnormal. So no one would do that unless they're motivated to do so, unless there's an ideology behind it, unless there's a reason for it, which there was for me. So likewise with Bitcoin, I mean, the motivations to hold Bitcoin are wide. Some to do with self-sovereignty, some to do with they're not liking fiat banks and the corruption of the system. Some could be just, I want to make money. Lots of different motives. But I think for Muslims, we should go beyond just the, I could say the dunyawi motive or the worldly motivations and have motivations beyond that. And I'll close on this point is that the reason for having more motivations, it gives you more determination and steadfastness in that. So there was this meme song thing on YouTube where a guy says, I will never go back to Tether. And he was talking about, you know, it can go down by 50%. I don't care. I'm never going back to Tether. And it's a meme. But when I heard that, I thought to myself, you know what? That is actually true. Because I'm not here just to make money. I'm here to be free. And I'm prepared to pay 50% premium for that freedom. And I think that's ideologically what you have to kind of... I'm not sure if I answered your question, James, but that
answers it very, very well. I mean, oftentimes when I'm out there trying to orange pill other Muslims, I think that the self-custody aspect to me is a little bit hard to get them to be motivated about doing it. Because oftentimes someone might be interested in Bitcoin only to the extent that they'll go on an exchange and buy Bitcoin and that's it. And they're dollar cost averaging on Coinbase or Binance and that's it. And to me, there's no point in doing that because you didn't really orange pill them. You only really get the very first step of being orange-pilled is just self-custody. You have to take your Bitcoin out of the exchange for it to have any value in terms of, like you said, being free. That's ultimately what we are trying to sell. Like, I will tell people straight up, I'm not just trying to get you into Bitcoin so that you can pump my bags. I am trying to get you into Bitcoin so that you can be free.
Well, I think the reason that this is the case, right, where even people who are longtime Bitcoiners, right, one of my buddies, he's owned Bitcoin since 2013, all right, and he keeps it on the exchange, and he wants to continue to keep it on the exchange. And the weird part about it is, for someone who's been in there since 2013, he really doesn't understand the self-sovereignty aspect of it at all. And because there's this inherent trust in the current system, where even if you are buying Bitcoin, you're buying it almost as like a stock that you think you can sell later, right? So it's that type of thinking, like thinking of this as just a way to earn long-term returns or alpha, right? Or, you know, instead of thinking about this as, hey, this is the potential future to be outside of the current system. And I think what's happening, though, is, and I know this because I've been in this world since 2017, as I've mentioned previously. So for me, I've seen a difference between the self-sovereignty aspect becoming more important since then. Back then, nobody cared. But now we're starting to see it more and more, which is good news. And I think that's going to continue as global events force people's hands, where they're going to realize that, wait a minute, this is important. And I think that will coincide with Bitcoin then becoming the monetary standard.
I think that those lessons have to be learnt. So if you just heard about Bitcoin and you heard that price goes up and we've heard blah, 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 it's better than fiat. That's one lesson. And I guess if someone is convinced by that narrative, then they would buy the Bitcoin because they understood it. But for example, if anyone bought Bitcoin on an exchange and then the exchange froze their account and asked them a whole lot of questions about where their money came from, they would now understand why it's important to hold it on Bitcoin. They'd understand why it's important to be sovereign, and that one of the properties of Bitcoin, one of the major properties of Bitcoin, is that you can transact when you want without anyone asking you any questions. That censorship resistance is what Bitcoin is. That's literally what it is. It's about taking responsibility for your actions and being responsible for spending it and receiving it. So these are things I guess people get in time, or maybe not, depends on who they are, if it's important to them. But I mean, for me, that lesson was learned quite early on because I've always had issues with banks asking me questions. Because as you all know, wealth is gatekeeping, as in there's a barrier. You're not allowed in the rich boys club unless you prove it. And especially if you're not from the background of having that privilege, then obviously you're scrutinized even more. And imagine if you're from a country that's not from that privilege, then again, you're scrutinized even more. And now we have regulations coming in which limits how you can use your wealth. So all of that. I think in time, people will learn why it's important as well. But like I said at the beginning, the first step, the stage one, is to be motivated to escape the system. And I guess there's other stages where you see other benefits of Bitcoin, especially in terms of actually using it, which is why another reason why I think having taken it off the exchange is really important, because how can you really evaluate its value if you never use the thing? It's like saying going to a magazine and buying a Ferrari by sending the money and then they say, yeah, you're not the owner. But it's still in the magazine. You've never sat in the car, you never sat in the seat, you never turned the engine on. You have no idea how good this car really is. You just bought it. So likewise, same thing with Bitcoin, you need to actually use the thing. I mean, whenever I hear people talk about how Bitcoin is dead and Lightning is dead, you can't, I'm like, bro, have you used the thing ever in your life? Are you crazy? So yeah, there's a lot to be said about that.
You know, there is an aspect to this. Sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to add one thing. There's an aspect to this, which is that people in general, especially over the last century, they are not interested in being responsible. They're not interested in having to take care of their wealth themselves. Like, look, more than 100 years ago, everyone was used to that because you had no choice, right? You were either hiding jewelry somewhere, gold somewhere, you know, there were schemes to keep valuables safe. And so what I expect is, I expect an era where self-custody will become extremely important. But then over time, what will happen is, let's say over decades and we've established a Bitcoin standard, just looking into the future, I think eventually there will be schemes for custody, right? Like multi-sig schemes, different ways where self-custody may become easier. Right? I think there's a lot of companies already working on that part of it. So I fully expect that that's where we'll end up.
I mean, I would agree purely from the fact that humans tend towards efficiency and speed. So taking custody of your Bitcoin is a lot more friction than leaving it on an exchange. I don't think it's to do with necessarily, I don't care for sovereignty. It's just that the work involved is not necessary for most people, especially if they've, you know that whole narrative of who cares if the government tracks my data, I'm not a criminal. Same thing.
Yeah.
It's because they don't think it is relevant to them. So if you think about it, if you do the mental maths, the risk of me losing my Bitcoin due to mismanagement is probably greater in their minds than just leaving an exchange taking it from them. So I think it's just a mental, calculation like that. But I think if time moves on, if technology facilitates, because there are ways of doing it with updates. Like, for example, one of the things that I was promised with Taproot was a wallet whereby you can have family members as a backup. So you can have like a multi-sig branch of the Merkle tree where they have access after a certain duration. So if you was to lose your keys, you can have family members or others come in and help. But that hasn't been implemented yet. It probably would once the UIX has been addressed.
So
I'm sure it would happen. But right now, I just don't think there's much of a need.
Yeah, I think this is the thing that I struggle with when I talk to other Muslims about Bitcoin. It's like oftentimes it's not even so much that I'm trying to get them to understand Bitcoin. I'm trying to get them to understand why they need to take responsibility for themselves. Like I like, you know, whenever I'm doing like these Bitcoin presentations or whatever, I'm like, for once in your life, take responsibility for yourself. Like I try to get that message across, because if you don't have that motivation to be responsible for yourself, then there's really no point in trying to talk to this person about Bitcoin. There has to be that drive where they need to take responsibility for themselves. So I was going to pass it to Hodeifa, but one thing I wanted to ask first is like, okay, so let's just say we've identified a Muslim and they're motivated to take their Bitcoin out of the exchange. And they're like, all right, Abu Yusuf, help me. How do I do this? What's the first step I need to do to take my Bitcoin out of the exchange?
Yeah, that's a hard one because I have experience with someone.
That's why I'm asking you, because it is a hard question to answer. Yeah,
it is a hard question. And again, for example, I'm not convinced yet that we've reached the UX level whereby someone like my mom or my auntie could take Bitcoin off an exchange. So, for example, one option one could use would be like a BIP85 option, whereby essentially you give them a seed phrase that's derived from your seed phrase. So at the very least, if something goes wrong, you can always re-derive the seed phrase. So you give them some level of sovereignty whilst a little level of hand-holding, but that's a trust model. And as you know, with Bitcoin, we try to build non-trust models. Amongst family, I guess it's not so bad. I mean, I guess some could argue not all family members are created equal. But if it's a trusted model where it's like your children, your wife, your mother, your husband, your whatever, and you want to help them have a seed phrase, then that's one way of managing it as a backup. But then we need solutions that is anti-proof, I would say. Yeah, so there are different solutions available whereby they try to replace the complexity, or like Moon Wallet, that's a wallet that, as much as it's fallen out of favor since the whole RBF issue which happened, it has fallen out of favor. But still, if I notice someone is totally a noob and they're going to struggle with looking after words, then the benefit of Moon is that it's recoverable with just an email and a password, which is what people are used to.
Yeah.
So normally I would say Moon is an easy option. Aqua is like an older brother of Moon because it has similar properties of Moon, but you just have a seed phrase. But yeah, I think Moon will probably be the easiest barrier to entry for owning Bitcoin if you're not going to go for those fully custodial wallets like Wallet Satoshi. But I don't know how you feel about Wallet Satoshi, but that'll be an example of fully custodial. Just literally someone else has the keys, I deal with that one. And that's somewhat sovereign. I mean, the likelihood of them running off with all your coins is minimal, but at least you can actually engage with actual commerce with Bitcoin rather than other than that. I mean, would you consider that to be like an exchange? Would what it's supposed to be kind of like an exchange anyway, in terms of behavior?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a custodial wallet, then yeah, you can think of the same problems we've been talking about in terms of personal sovereignty. You haven't really escaped that, but I will say that using a custodial wallet, I like to introduce people to that first, just so that they can see, okay, if you use a custodial wallet that has Lightning enabled, you can at least see the instant transaction. So they might be motivated now to be like, oh, okay, wow, this Bitcoin thing actually works. I want more of it. I think that's kind of the hard part, is that everyone approaches Bitcoin from a different aspect. So you kind of have to guide them along very slowly. And it's like you said, you might introduce Moon Wallet to them, and then you might get them to do Aqua Wallet. And you know, you're only talking about hot wallets so far. What about cold storage? What wallets would you recommend for cold storage for someone that's getting interested in it?
Yeah, I mean, I like to keep things simple. And I think Jade is one of the most simple wallets out there because it has the scope to expand beyond the simple, but it fundamentally is very simple. The Ledger, I think there's just so much bad history with Ledger, generally speaking. Although they have, in terms of product, I think they have the best user interface thing, but in terms of their history, they made too many bad decisions and made too many mistakes. Trezor would probably be a slightly head up. I've never had a Trezor, ironically. Never in my life had owned a Trezor. I just know that they memed Ledger for years about their data leak until they had themselves a data leak. Same one. Which is why you should never repeat to someone about a mistake that you can easily make yourself, which they did. And even Jade, I think they had a data leak, but it wasn't widely known. I mean, I only know it because if you get a wallet from Blockstream, you can use a fake email address. And That's generally advisable if you're going to sign up to any website. I mean, fake in the sense that you still receive the emails, but it's not your main email. So at least everyone has a unique email. And I know someone who used a fake email with them. And then on that email, they got spam. There's no way you can get spam unless it was sold or there's a leak. And I think it was announced quietly that there was a minor leak or something like that. But everyone has it. Everyone has it, unfortunately. So if I was to go full geek, I would go for a seed signer.
Yes.
But yeah. We're not talking about geek here. We're not talking about them guys. Them guys who want to play Russian roulette with their money. No, it's not Russian roulette. It's not that bad. But
I was recommended seed signer too recently. I've been asking for different self-custody solutions and even multi-sigs. I was exploring different multi-sig options from Electrum, Sparrow, Asigna, and then there's the hard wallets and cold wallets. And it's true. Oh, Liana, actually, you mentioned the time locks that would allow for inheritance. Liana's actually pretty decent in their second release now. Much easier to use and understand. Although, again, the UX is still my mom would just be like, what? For my mom, I really should just put a titanium plate together, punch in the seed phrases and then let her store it with her jewelry or something.
Want to save in Bitcoin faster? Coinbits is built on a sound, tried and true dollar cost averaging strategy that turns Bitcoin's volatility in your favor. This Bitcoin only app takes the uncertainty and fear out of Bitcoin saving by rounding up debit and credit card purchases to the nearest dollar, then using the difference to buy Bitcoin. Set it, forget it, and let the app automatically tax your high time preference spending by saving the hardest money ever. Once you've gotten a private wallet set up, Coinbits encourages you to withdraw your Bitcoin to your own private wallet and embrace the Bitcoin standard way of life. Coinbits is a great way to introduce your pre-coiner friends and family to Bitcoin. Get them set up in under a minute and help kickstart their journey by turning every day's spare change into Bitcoin. Start stacking on coinbitsapp.com and save your time and energy in the soundest money ever.
Specifically, I kind of want to move the conversation and ask a little bit about sovereignty in the context of RIBA, right? My perspective on it has been that, just by participating in the fiat system, right? I mean, it's unavoidable, but participating in it, we're told that the person writing it, keeping it, taking it are all participants in RIBA. And how does self-sovereignty relate to that from your perspective?
I would say, so let's start from the beginning. You've got $1,000 in fiat, in cash. Now, as much as that dollars only existed because someone somewhere took out a loan and then it came into existence, which is most of fiat today was birthed out of some bond or mortgage debt somewhere. But that, one could argue, already happened. It's not like it's happening. It happened. Someone else did it. That's their sin. That's not my sin. I'm just using the tool. So, okay, that's an argument. I can't fault you for the original sin. We're not Christians here. I can't say this is the original sin here. You've inherited it. No, you're just using the tool that, it happened. Okay, there's that. But then you've deposited that into the bank to actually make it useful, because in cash, it's only as good as face-to-face. Now, with that, you are definitely facilitating an industry here, because as much as banks can always issue loans without necessarily having backing, it still provides liquidity for them for withdrawals and whatnot. You still make it easier for them to do their business, which is why bank runs are illegal in some places, or there's things to mitigate bank runs and whatnot. So in that regard, what you could do is put that $1,000 into Bitcoin. And at least then you're back to at the beginning, whereby not only are you not depositing your money in the bank, but you're also not holding the asset which was birthed out of RIBA. So you've kind of, at least ideologically, exited that system. Now, the caveat here will be to acknowledge and admit, because we can't make things up, is that just because you go after Bitcoin doesn't mean you've done anything meaningful to the bank, because the money is still in the bank. As in, you put the money in the bank, you send the money to an exchange bank, so now the exchange bank account has the $1,000, and then you've just done a conversion, now you have the Bitcoin. The dollars are still there. It hasn't disappeared. The only way you can actually destroy fiat legally is to pay off the debt that created it. So once the debt exists and hasn't been paid off, then it exists. That's it, really. There's nothing more you could do. You could burn it, but then you're destroying wealth, and that's haram. There actually was a YouTube video where someone actually got a million in physical, and they were shoveling it into fire. Literally, they burnt it. It was a famous video from over a decade ago. Anyway, but now you have your Bitcoin. You can now use it by spending, sending, receiving. You could do all the activities you would normally do with a bank. You could do it with Bitcoin, with other Bitcoiners or whatnot. I would say that falls into the ayah, فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ مَا سَتَعْتُمْ, fear Allah as much as you are able. So you are distancing yourself as much as possible, even if your action is minimal. Like the hadith, where it says, if you see an evil, change your jihad. And if you can't, then move your tongue. And if you can't, then at least hate it. That last one I want to focus on, the hating of your heart. What does that even mean? I would say it means don't be complacent in the sin. It's very easy that if I can't change it with my hand and I can't change it with my tongue, then there's nothing I can do about it. Therefore, nothing will happen. And we see all the time people become complacent in sin because they're not doing it. Therefore, they lose understanding of how bad it really is. And that's why the message of Allah is actually reminding us, even if you're not doing it or engaging in it and you can't even stop it, at least maintain that level of hatred and bughd and disdain for it. And I think that is manifest by your choice in exiting. So putting your money into Bitcoin is you materializing that hatred, that disdain for that system that you want to be out of it. Yes, I might lose 2% today or 5% today, but because I'm maintaining this disdain, I want nothing to do with it. Leave me alone. I want nothing to do with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great point, man. I often think about that myself. And the question I ask is, as human beings, right, our intent is the core of our free will, you know, if you will. Our intent and how we act with intent is, I think, what we're going to be judged on to a degree, right? Obviously.
100%.
Now, when it comes to riba, when it comes to the fiat system, obviously, we all know that it's unavoidable to a degree. But I think where intent comes in is, for example, if you're smart enough to recognize that, hey, this system is corrupt, this system is unjust, but you're not actually taking any action despite knowing and intending and having the means to do so, you'll be judged differently than, say, someone who just didn't have the means to even understand the concept. So I guess that's where intent comes in. That's where the ability to move out, whatever you can do, that's what your point of, whatever you can do to get out of the system, whether it's just mentally or whether it's an action that you take, you should try to do so.
Yeah. And just to reemphasize, like, as an example, Allah mentioned the Quran about people indulging in evil speech. And Allah specifically mentions, وَاتَقْعُدُوا مَعَهُمْ حَتَّى يَخُوضُوا فِي حَدِيثٍ غَيْرِهِ. Don't sit with them until they engage in other speech. What does that even mean? It means that they are engaging in speech. You tried your best to stop them. They're not stopping physically, verbally, but they're continuing. Now, them speaking about it, you're not engaging it. So you're sitting there, is not participating in it. But there's an added level now of manifesting your hatred for it. You're going to get up and leave. And you're ordered to get up and leave and do not return until they have a different conversation. So that's an example of exactly that. With your money, you're getting up and you're leaving. I said, I'm not going to engage in your conversation, in your riba conversation, until you engage in something else. If you want to do the halal, I'll come back to you with the halal. Or if I'm forced to because of necessity, then I'm forced to. But while I have a choice, and this is the beauty I love about Bitcoin, is that Bitcoin gave us a choice it never had before. Before we had the dinar and dirham, but realistically, it wasn't a choice. I mean, people always talk about, yeah, I can walk into any shop. I mean, Goldbugs always say, yes, you go into any shop in the world with gold and they'll accept it from you. No, bro, they're not taking no gold from you, bro. I'm telling you. They're going to look at you and think, are you nuts? Are you going to shave off like milligrams of gold to pay for this packet of crisps? No one's taking your gold. As much as gold is valuable, no one's going to deal with the hassle of verifying. I mean, how do you even verify a milligram of gold to do your weekly shop? How do you do that? No one's doing it. No one's going to get a tester and push it on this metal to try and see if it's real. No one's doing that. So Bitcoin gave us a choice. Now we have a choice. That's what I'll say to people. Look, now you have a choice. It's up to you to make the right decision. Is it difficult? Of course it is. Just like getting out from a conversation that you maybe use engaged in, maybe using some people and going to someone else is complicated. It's difficult moving from someone else. It's embarrassing even. Everyone's talking about something, you get up and leave. Then they start laughing at you. I mean, that takes commitment to say, okay, I don't care, I'm getting up and leaving. So likewise, I see it as exactly the same thing. Now, some may say, oh, brother, it's difficult, I've got no choice. Okay, you've got no choice. You've answered that question. But if you did have a choice, then what?
I mean, humanity really hasn't had a choice in a long time, if we think about it, right? Look, I mean, there was a time when there were gold coins, silver coins,
yeah.
And that was more true to honest money than we have been in the last 100 years.
Yeah.
So I think that, unfortunately, the humans of today, because of the last 100 years, mentally, it's very difficult for them to make the jump from what they know and understand about money to what honest money would actually look like and why it's honest money.
I mean, just on a technological level, I think if you look at it, Bitcoin only really makes sense because we have telecommunications, because we can converse over long distances. If there was no way for me to talk to you other than face-to-face, then gold is fine.
Of course.
Silver is fine because I have to see you anyway.
I mean, it's not as efficient, right? We could say Bitcoin is more efficient, honest money than gold could ever dream of, because in the sense that, look, you could always dilute gold. Right. We saw that happen in many empires.
Yeah.
We saw them dilute their gold and silver over time. Right. And then that was their version of hyperinflation.
Yeah,
and so with Bitcoin, you can't do that. Not only are you getting instant transport, you're also getting immutable characteristics.
To some degree, I agree. But think of a world whereby I can't speak to you anyway unless I see you. Then I'm not sure if Bitcoin offers anything really.
Of course not. No, but then it wouldn't be possible, right? It wouldn't be possible for it to exist in the first place.
Yeah.
Because you need the internet in order for Bitcoin to exist.
Yeah. So I'm saying that Bitcoin is basically the only option we've had now that we can talk long distance, realistically speaking. Because the only thing that really worked, I mean, you think about it, which makes sense why we had the previous system before. We used debt instruments before because all you needed from a debt is a commitment. I'm on the phone, I'll talk to you long distance. I say, yeah, I'll pay you next week. Or I'll pay you when I see you. Okay, fine. Deal's done. We just transacted using debt because it's just information. There's no need for anything material, but I just agree because we can communicate. But with Bitcoin, I can settle now. So that was the reason I would say why we had the debt, because it was the easiest thing to do. Obviously, the interest on top of that was opportunistic behavior, but the debt was just the easiest thing to do. But now we can settle. We don't need the debt. We can settle face-to-face. And specifically, this is the last point I'll say, because we can do actual services. We can provide a service long distance as well. So I can have a guy in China doing the admin. I can have a guy in India doing the coding. I can have a guy in Indonesia doing the packaging and the manufacturing. And I can organize all these people across the world. And Bitcoin just infinitely better to settle or do business under, minus the volatility.
Ramadan is a time of mercy, a time of giving, a time when every act of sadaqah carries multiplied reward. Right now, at Orphans of Uganda Children's Center, children who have lost everything are being cared for with love, shelter, and education. Your sadaqah this Ramadan can provide for ongoing needs, from daily food supplies, to school fees, to urgent medical care for illnesses like malaria. Your support makes a direct difference. And now, giving is easier than ever. You can donate instantly using Bitcoin or Lightning, fast, borderless, and direct, helping your sadaqa reach them without delay. To give today, send your sadaqa via Lightning to Orphans of Uganda at 8333.mobi. That's Orphans of Uganda at 8333.mobi. Orphans of Uganda Children's Center. Independently verified. Transparent updates. Real impact. This Ramadan, let your sadaqa bring hope.
And I think I want to take the conversation a little bit in that direction with, one, why spend Bitcoin? Because that's a big topic right now. And then two is, why not borrow against Bitcoin? I mean, obviously, we're here to say that borrowing with interest is wrong. And, you know, even like with Muslims doing business amongst each other, as I understand, people will be just like, listen, brother, take this 10,000, no interest, do whatever you want with it. And if there's tips, give me tips. It's just simpler to do business that way sometimes when you just trust two people. But like, yeah, what does it look like on Bitcoin? Can we have alternatives? Must we always spend Bitcoin? What if I get locked into a bad price? These are some business-related questions I have. And where does the Muslim economy participate and how does it participate? What tools do we use at all?
So the...
Oh, and sorry, one more thing is T mentioned that we can't dilute Bitcoin. I think there is also the argument like with MSTR and digital credit, we will end up using Bitcoin as fiat, just like gold again. Yeah.
I think the issue we have here is just the tooling and a clear model. I don't think it's impossible. It's just that the need hasn't driven anyone to make the tools yet. So here's an example. I want to do business, and this is a position I've taken recently. I don't see any problem, logistically speaking, to settle a contract in fiat, in the sense that we've made a contract, we've agreed on payment in fiat, and the reason why we do so is because everything around us is in fiat. It's difficult to force someone to accept payment in Bitcoin when his supplier accepts fiat and his manufacturers in some fiat and everything around him is in a particular currency, but then we've gone and done the transaction on the second currency. You'll have problems either way, to the upside or to the downside. So the alternative for now, until the supply chain accepts Bitcoin, the best part will be if the supply chain accepts Bitcoin at all levels of the supply chain, then fair enough, I can do my accounts with my union account in Bitcoin. But until that happens, it's difficult. But what you could do instead is use Bitcoin as collateral for a deal, which is what people do all the time. You can have Bitcoin as a collateral to guarantee the execution of, or to guarantee good behavior. Like what people do in BISC. I want to convert Bitcoin into fiat. How do I make sure people behave properly? I can use Bitcoin. That's one of the things that a lot of people are really even tapping into. The fact that Bitcoin is instant collateral globally. So people talk about the big institutions. Often they talk about liquidity and collateral. What can they use? Their stocks as collateral, they use bonds as collateral because it's very liquid and it's easy to move things around. But Bitcoin is, I would say, even more liquid than all of them. Yes, it's volatile. Fine. But as long as you intend to settle and conclude a deal and whatever thing and don't intend to default, then it's superior collateral. So one avenue for how Muslims can use that is exactly that, collateral. For example, I want to buy a product from China to sell on Amazon. If the Chinese guy is happy to wait 1 or 2 months for payment, i.e. once he makes the delivery and I make the sale and then I give him the thing, then he's happy to wait the 2 months because he knows that if anything goes wrong, there's Bitcoin collateral. He can always liquidate and get his money anyway. So that's an avenue which has not really been explored, which I'm actually working on now, by the way. But I think if we could make a UX that you don't have to do anything but press a few buttons and then the contract is done and it's locked in like BISC, then I think that would open up avenues of business which I don't think exist at the moment. And I've told BISC about this years ago. When I first started using BISC from back in 2018-19, I said to them, why don't you extend or expand your app to include other than Bitcoin? Nothing really happened. I understand that there's added complexity because if disputes occur, you're going to need to resolve that dispute. But I don't think it's beyond the remit of possibility. But anyway, to answer that question, I don't have much time, but I think that is one avenue which I think would add a new transactional dynamic to business whereby you can use instant collateral easy for short-term contracts. I'm not sure it would work on things like 10 to 20 year or, as Trump says, 50-year mortgage. But on the short-term premise, even like 1 or 2 years, I'm sure it's mentally feasible. And also, I think Bitcoin could be used as a replacement for reputation. So sometimes people do business on reputational collateral, clout. I reckon Bitcoin could be easily that same kind of thing, whereby that can just force good behavior. For example, I want to have a meeting with someone. I don't want to waste my time going somewhere and not going to be there. Khalas, lock in some coin sats, isn't it? If you don't turn up, that's my payment, man. You're wasting my time, my fees to come here. That's it. I think that's one avenue on a social level where you can probably force people to have good behavior by locking in some sats. Maybe it's a good idea, I don't know. But I would like to have someone book a call and lock in some sats that if they don't turn up, I haven't wasted my time.
Yeah, you know, I think that's definitely an aspect that I feel like is kind of underexplored because, you know, in the current... Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, well, I was going to bring it into the digital identity discussion, but that might be a question for T to ask because now you don't have to rely on the government to give you, you know, good boy points. Now you can just kind of use Bitcoin as collateral for that.
So I don't know if you heard MB there, Sheikh, but he was asking about digital identity, right? So on our podcast here, we've spoken previously about digital identity going into the future, right? Like what we imagine the institutions of the future will look like. And you mentioned something about being able to create and settle contracts in a smooth, easy way, right? That is one aspect of it. But I think none of that is going to be possible without some sort of unified digital identity system. So what I envision, and I want to get your take on this, what I envision is, I envision once the Bitcoin standard is in place, let's just assume that world comes to life, right? I think over time, people will be forced to create these new institutions and these new methods of identity and trust that will be built alongside or on top of the Bitcoin settlement layer, right? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so that's part of what I'm working on at the moment. So my idea of, again, I haven't made a minimum viable product, so who knows if it's even a good idea. But my idea is that for Bitcoiners, the narrative has been for a very long time that anonymity is tantamount because of censorship and whatnot and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
But realistically, if you want Bitcoin to be a currency that people use, not niche cypherpunks who want to surf the internet anonymously, but actual people on the ground, then knowing who you're doing business with is really important. If I sell a car and I receive Bitcoin, and something goes wrong, and they ask me, who did you sell the car to? And I say, oh, I sent it to Abdullah so-and-so. And they say, but how do you know it was Abdullah? How do you know who he is? It could be this coin you received came from someone else. You have no way of knowing who sent you the coin. Or put it another way, I go to Amazon website, I want to pay Amazon money, and I see a QR code come on my screen. I mean, I could send the money, but there is a slight risk that the website has been hacked and that the QR code has been replaced, because it's still code at the end of the day, so it's just JavaScript. I mean, we have actual examples of people having malware on their computer and the data, their send address was being replaced. So verification of who you're doing business with is going to be important, or is practically important. Even though anonymity has its place, I think knowing who you're doing business with is important. So the model I've been playing with in my head is a model whereby you may do, imagine you did a KYC, for example, with a law firm or something like that. So at least you've proved who you are. So I'm not even engaging in the idea of having some kind of digital ID token whereby you don't have to. I'm not going down that complicated route, because that is a conversation which I think is a very difficult problem to solve. But I'm just going by what we know already. We already know KYC exists. You have apps, you unlock, you download, you show your passport, you show your face, they prove who you are, say you are, fine. The model I'm working on is a way in which I can prove that this address belongs to me without the KYC company knowing that I even did that. So a person can take evidence, or they can take data from this exchange. The exchange has no idea what the data is referring to. They have no idea what address is referring to. They have no idea anything about who I am, but they're just providing data that this is Muawiyah. He's given us data, and they receive data from me, and they can piece two things together. Okay, this address is confirmed to be belonging to me. So now I have provable evidence that my KYC data is attached to this address. And without, this is the key point, without handing over my XPub, this is the key. How do you prove who you are to a body without giving them access to my entire chain? Because then there's privacy issues. Now they know exactly who I did business with, how much I did business with, all the coins I have. So there has to be a way to obfuscate that data by just providing proof to the individual alone. The final stage is they can, if they wanted to, present that data I gave them to the courts if ever there need be. So it's only something I'm given to them that they can use if they needed to, but it's not out there in the ether just by default. Does it make sense? So it's a way of always, you can almost say it's a way of putting person A with person B, provably, without involving person C, unless they need to be. So that model, I'm not saying it's the end solution, but I think it will be a useful temporary solution. If there is an end solution to privacy or to digital ID that is usable, then great. But I'm just looking at the model of today. We already have KYC that already exists. How about a model whereby I can prove this person is him without actually going back to the next person? So one idea would be that technically with that model, exchanges don't need to do KYC anymore. I don't actually need to go to an exchange and do KYC with them. I do KYC with this guy, or KYC with that guy. I don't have to do KYC 10 million times, because I've done it once. Now all the exchange has to do is ask this law firm, is this Muawiyah? The law firm will say, I don't know. Here's data. You verify yourself. That's it. That's just one idea. So again, I'm not sure if it's not saying it's a good idea. It's something I'm trying to explore, if it's possible to do so. I have some ideas about how to do so using derivation of addresses. So essentially, you want to have actual address. You can have a derivation, or you can use Merkle trees, whereby essentially one way you can... Does anyone here know what Merkle trees are? If you guys might be listening, a Merkle tree, basically, where you have a list of data that you... Essentially, you wrap up. You wrap up this data into like a single piece of data, and then you can essentially store that root data, you could say, with the company, and they have no idea what's inside the branches. They only know what the root is. So essentially, you can now then give whoever you want, say, this is my address, and this is the Merkle data or Merkle proofs, and they can use that together with the proof from the company and to verify that this is actually me. That's one route. One is using Merkle proofs. I was trying to think of using zero-knowledge proofs, but I haven't fully mentally internalized how zero-knowledge proofs work. I know how Merkle tree works. That's easy. But zero-knowledge proofs, I haven't found a good explanation how that works in the mathematics. So I haven't got that one. But yeah, I think that will be a good temporary way of dealing with that. A simple way to verify that this address belongs to this person. So if I send it to him, I can prove in court that I sent it to him. I know I've been going on a bit, but just to give the motivation why I had this idea. Someone asked me last year, a lawyer, because I'm representing a client who took someone to court because they did a business transaction with them, sent them some coin, and they needed to prove that in court that they sent it to this person for whatever reason. So he was asking me, how would you prove that from the blockchain? And I said, there's no way of knowing it went to that person unless they point to an exchange who's done the KYC. But if they haven't done that, although you got the address from the person, there's nothing that you can provide in court that proves that it went to him. He can just say, no, it went to someone else. I never received it, Your Honor. He can say a lot of things. He can say I was hacked. There's nothing that proves that it went to him. So that was the reason why I had that, because technically, as much as he paid for a service, there's nothing he could take to court to say he paid him. And that's important to do that. So yeah, I haven't solved the problem yet. I've just actually, ironically, last night, learned how to make my first iOS app. It's quite easy, actually. It's not that difficult. So I'm now going to work on the user experience, because I'm going to forget the code, forget all the back-end stuff. I want to try and make a user experience that makes it anti-proof, if possible. I'm not sure if it's possible. But if you can make an anti-proof user experience, then the back-end comes. Because I think from a geeky perspective, what a lot of geeks do, myself being a geek as well, is we get overly excited about what you can do in tech that we kind of forget who's using the tech. We need to take the Apple approach whereby the tech evaporates into the background and you just use the thing. Again, I'm not sure if it's possible. I'm trying to work with Anwar, if you can help me with that.
Well, since you mentioned Apple, though, 2026 is going to be Apple's 50th anniversary since founding. So it's taken them a long time to get to where they are. So it's been, what, less than 16 in Bitcoin? We'll achieve it. We'll achieve it, inshallah.
50 years? Are you sure 50? I thought they started in the
80s. 1976 is when they were founded. Crazy.
And Microsoft's 1975. Funny enough, IBM started out in 1911 before World War One. That's insane to me.
It's like Nintendo. I think Nintendo started in the 1800s. Selling toys. Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, again, apologies for my rant, because sometimes I have a lot of ideas and I talk a lot. I need to work on my brevity. Sometimes I really wish I could be like Luke Dasher, who just gives like one word answers. But sometimes, sometimes too short is not a good idea.
All right, it's all yours, Zefa.
All right, well, thank you very much, Mawia. This was an insightful conversation. I love that you have, mashallah, the philosophical, spiritual, and, well, three, and the technology perspective as well. We've been chatting back and forth. I'd love to continue that on my end as well, and hopefully see you in further podcasts. And you do still create content online if you want to shout that out. People can follow you online as well and see your work.
Yeah, so I think my YouTube handle is BTC/0. And I think that's also my Twitter handle. I don't really post that much on Twitter as much as I used to, because there's just a lot of time spent on that, which is little benefit. But yeah.
We're all moving to Nostra now, self-custody.
Oh yeah, my Nostra handle is 52118522181111.
You did not.
No, I'm joking.
That's too funny. But thank you so much, everybody. If you have any last words for today, please share. But it's been a fantastic discovery on self-custody with y'all. And inshallah, we can be better khalifs in this world and sovereigns for ourselves.
Thanks for having me.
Reba Resistance is a production of Pod Systems and Bitcoin Majlis.